All right. I'd like to welcome everyone to this March 16th POL committee meeting. I have a few announcements before we start. This meeting is being conducted in person at the Engineering Services Section Boardroom. As a convenience to the public, members of the public may also participate virtually by logging into the agency's Zoom meeting. Any member of the public may listen to the meeting or make comments to the committee using the call-in number and Zoom webinar link. In the event there's a disruption of service, which prevents the agency from broadcasting the meeting to members of the public using either the call-in option or internet-based service, the meeting will not be postponed or scheduled, but will continue without remote participation. The remote participation option is being provided as a convenience to the public and is not required. Members of the public are welcome to attend the meeting in person. If you participate in public comment from your computer, tablet, or smartphone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, please click the raise hand feature in Zoom. You will be notified that it is your turn to speak, and then please unmute when requested. To participate in public comment via phone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, dial *9 to raise your hand. Phone participants will be called on by the last two digits of the phone number or by name. When it is your turn to speak, dial *6 to unmute. To the public attending in person, there are public comment cards on the table outside. Please complete and return them to the administrator to help expedite public comment. The procedures for tonight's meeting are as follows. I will introduce each agenda item. Staff will present. I will ask for public comment. I will then ask for discussion and questions from the committee members. The committee will then come to a consensus to move an item to the board for consideration. Any PowerPoint shown at tonight's meeting will be posted on the SCD Water website. All committee members are present, and we'll start with item one, Pledge of Allegiance. Dr. Colley, would you start the Pledge of Allegiance for us?
Stand, place your right hand over your heart. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation,
under God,
indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. Do we have any public comment on non-agenda items? No. Okay. Nobody online? All right. We will start with our legislative consultant reports, the first one being 3.1, presented by Jeff Bowman from Ben Squick Associates.
Thank you. It's good to see everybody tonight, and it's even better to see that the sun is shining.
Yes.
So, in addition to my written report from a couple of weeks ago, on this past Tuesday, the Biden administration proposed a rulemaking for a federal drinking water standard on PFAS. There hasn't been a publication yet in the Federal Register. Working with your team to consider filing comments to the proposed rule, since you guys have a lot of expertise in PFAS treatment. The proposal, if finalized, would regulate PFOA and PFOS as individual contaminants, and then will regulate four other PFAS, PFNA, PFHXS, PFBS, and Gen X chemicals as a mixture. For PFOA and PFOS, EPA is proposing to regulate these contaminants at a level that can be reliably measured at 4 parts per trillion. The other concerning news about this proposed rulemaking is that in the economic analysis, they showed a $772 million nationwide impact to utilities, which for those of us that have been in this business, we thought that was really an underestimation of the costs that will be needed to comply with this rulemaking. So we're going to begin working with some of the larger national trade associations on strategies moving forward. We'll also keep you guys updated when this gets published in the Federal Register. Usually folks will get about 60, sometimes 90 days to make public comments, and then the agency will use those comments to develop a final rulemaking. Last week, the Biden administration also released its fiscal year 2024 budget request. I kind of divide things up into good news, bad news, and just news. In the just news component, the administration included $1.6 billion for the Clean Water State Revolving Loan Fund and $1.1 billion for the Drinking Water Revolving Fund. In a way, that's good news. That keeps up with what Congress appropriated last year. Usually the administration on these types of programs, they tend to undershoot the mark a little bit, but it was nice to see that they kind of kept up with where Congress was headed with this program. They also requested $80.4 million for WIFIA, the Water Infrastructure Finance and Innovation Act program. That's up from $5 million over the enacted 23 funding. The other good news was for the first time, the budget request included funds for EPA's Alternative Water Source Program. That's really the first nationwide EPA water recycling program. It'll allow EPA to provide competitive grants to states, interstate, intrastate water resources development agencies for engineering, designing, constructing alternative water source systems, including water recycling systems. This was reauthorized in the bipartisan infrastructure law. Again, it's authorized only at $25 million a year, but hopefully we can get some successes under our belt and grow the program. The not so great news is the administration, sort of typical with previous budget submissions that I've been through in my career working with the Bureau of Reclamation, the administration did not request funds for the Bureau's Title 16 Water Reuse Grants Program, nor did it request funds for the desalination or water purification grant programs. But this is an important step in the annual funding process. Congress will begin writing the annual appropriations bills starting in April. But this actually set in motion a couple of furious weeks of work with your SCV water team. Member offices, including those in our congressional delegation, opened their portals for specific project requests for FY 2024. We used to call those earmarks. The deadlines for your congressional delegation of Senator Padilla, Senator Feinstein, and Congressman Garcia, that's all past us. We did submit a project-specific funding request to those three offices for the S-Wells Water Treatment Facility Project. We had meetings this week with Congressman Mike Garcia's staff and Senator Feinstein's staff. We will likely be meeting with Senator Padilla's staff in the coming weeks. The members themselves, they have a deadline to get their requests to their respective appropriations committees. Those are due at the end of this month. So this is a very compressed timetable that we worked under. It's doubly difficult because House members can only request up to 15 project-specific designations across the seven bills that are eligible for earmarks. So our S-Wells Water Treatment Facility project will be competing against other projects in the congressman's district, like roads, bridges, airports, other important public service components that are eligible for federal funds. So with that, I'll close, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you have for me.
Any public comment online or in person?
There is none.
Director comments and questions?
I had a few. I wanted to know, first of all, if we have any updates on the Colorado River water rights feud that's going on right now.
Not since the last time I was on the call. There was this week in the House, there were several House members in California, as well as some of the upper basin states, that created a congressional caucus. Caucuses are usually sort of a demonstration of members that take a particular interest in a specific issue area. There's a Colorado River caucus also on the Senate side. I think this is going to try to mimic that. It's kind of a working group, something that we'll keep an eye on moving forward.
Okay. And then I saw that you mentioned the cybersecurity. Seth, I was wondering, how do we fare on it? Like, where do we fall as an agency?
So I could start. And, you know, a lot of these cybersecurity programs, just like the states of the EPA SRFs, these go directly to the states. And so, you know, we encourage folks in your case to engage Cal OES, because I think that's the agency that will be receiving those funds for cybersecurity activities.
Okay. And do we internally know yet? Or is it like we just haven't gotten the full list of what we need to be doing yet?
Yeah, I don't think we have received the full list of what we're need to be doing yet. But I can look into this just specifically for our agency. So I don't know, Jeff, if you have any more advice on that, but...
So I would, the one thing also that, you know, EPA put out sort of a best management practices memorandum. You know, the funding side will be addressed by FEMA. But that's probably something that will need some more exploration on our part.
And we'll look into it.
Okay. And then My last question is, are we sending anyone to this EPA listening sessions?
Yes, we usually do participate in those.
Is anybody from our agency going to be going to that? Because it's talking about the whole perchlorate and PFAS and all that stuff.
We can definitely get a staff member in that.
Because I think that would be beneficial for us to let them know what we think.
They are doing a webinar for the proposed PFAS regulation. I just tried to go into the website and it's been hacked. So I wouldn't advise going onto that website quite yet.
So cybersecurity. Okay.
I may be contacted shortly by my IT department.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Director Armitage.
Yeah, I mean, I had same comments. One about the cybersecurity, although I feel like we're pretty proactive, but I feel like it's always a good idea to see what funds are available to apply for. So thank you for bringing that up, Director Bronstein. And then the same thing with the CERCLA listening sessions. I felt like I imagine somebody on the team's kind of keeping an eye on that, to ensure that the agencies like ours that are having to pay out a lot of money for cleaning up the contamination are represented and heard, and so also since we're part of litigation, so I thought that was a good idea too. So that's it. Thank you.
If I could just make one quick comment, I know the Director Armitage, you didn't ask a question, but the one thing I will say is that if for any reason some of us can't cover one of these events, the EPA and the Bureau of Reclamation are really, really good about posting slide decks and the actual webinar on their website. It usually takes a couple of days before they post it. But the slide decks they produce tend to be very informative, and sometimes you don't even need to watch the webinar.
Okay. Good to know. Thanks.
I just had one question, Jeff. You mentioned the 15 projects that Congressman Garcia, I guess, can select, or obviously either the senators, I guess, are limited to 15 too?
No. The senators have no limitation on the amount of in the Senate, they call it congressionally directed spending. On the House side, they call it community project funding. So the senators have no limitations in terms of the number of congressionally directed spending requests they can make. The House, when they first did away with the moratoria 3 years ago, they were limited to 10. They raised that to 15. But I don't think that's – I think that 15 is going to stay pretty consistent for the next few years.
When do we know if our project made it?
That is a great question. So – Steve and I have had several calls this week, and we've asked about timetables. So the members have to get, in the case of the House, in the case of Congressman Garcia, he has to get his 15 requests to the Appropriations Committee at the end of this month. That same rule applies for all of the senators' earmarks. The committees, the respective Appropriations Committees, will then have to deliberate internally in terms of what they want to do with all of these project-specific request. That will probably go through August. Mm-hmm. In talking to the Senate offices, they have sort of suggested to us that we may know what they sent to the respective committees in May, perhaps June. Mm-hmm. And then we won't see the final package. Again, this is going to be a very tough budget cycle. So there's going to need to be a continuing resolution probably to get us through into the fiscal year, the next fiscal year. You know, we didn't know about our earmarks for FY 2023 until right before the holidays. It was like December 21st. So I don't know that we're on that optimistic of a timetable for this upcoming fiscal year is how I would put it. Okay. I don't rule anything out. I think you guys have heard my comment before that nothing brings the deal together faster than the smell of jet fumes at Reagan National Airport during a holiday. But I just the majorities are so slim in both the House and the Senate that I think it's going to be a very difficult budget cycle this year. Okay.
All right. Thank you. I think that is all we needed. So thank you for your presentation.
Thank you. It's good to see everybody.
Good to see you. All right, we will move on to item 3.2, presented by, I understand, Anthony Molina and Emily Aiken.
Good evening, everyone. Good evening, Hello. Everyone. Thank you. As you noted, Dennis is actually out of town. He's out of the state traveling right now. So Anthony Molina is back with us to report from Sacramento. Just wanted to start out by noting that last month's report was the night before bill introduction deadline. And so the very next day we saw that California had the most bills introduced in over a decade. And as of today, there have been over 2,800 measures introduced, many of those spot bills, but we're continuing to see a great number of amendments to come in and bill hearings are starting. So that's where we are right now. The next few weeks and most of April will be really busy with longer committee hearings, and we'll be seeing a lot of our bills amended, continuing to have substance added and heard and voted on for the first time. A lot of the discussion, as you know, Dennis represents you on the Aqua State Legislative Committee. A lot of the discussion recently for SLC has been around water rights. So we wanted to highlight that for you as well. They actually had a special meeting on March 9th because Aqua had a really intense legal working group that created a proposal of their own. And so there was a lot of debate regarding the political strategy of whether Aqua should have their own water rights bill. As you see in the report, there was a very long water rights hearing that took place in the legislature in February. So that really set the tone for that being a theme this year. Aqua ultimately decided not to sponsor their own legislation right now, but they do have a working document to hit a lot of the points that were noted in the legislative hearing and then also that have been brought up in a few of the bills introduced. Aqua decided to oppose the four main water rights bills. To note for you, AB 460 by Assemblywoman Bauer Cahan is the most discussed bill and the most comprehensive bill on water rights right now. It really addresses a wide array of concerns, but the author's office is, you know, going to be working with stakeholders, and there is hope for amendments, but we're just seeing right now where that one's going to go. And there are a few other ones to note, such as AB 676 by Assemblymember Bennett, which defines domestic use, and then AB 1337 and SB 389 by Senator Allen. So those are the water rights proposals which Aqua is opposing, and kind of encompass some of the themes that were discussed at the February 28th hearing on it. The next big topic this year we're seeing in legislation is water bonds. These are proposals that will ultimately, if all goes right according to the plan, be on the 2024 ballot. So we're in the kind of information gathering stage right now. The estimated timeline for this would be one of these or two of these bills will make it into the second house this year. And then in the fall is really going to be the time where decisions will be made on what is actually going to be in the final text that will be in front of voters in 2024. So we've actually been participating in Aqua's infrastructure working group on this. They have a number of priorities, including recycling, groundwater, flood protection, dam safety, surface water storage, all that they're going to try and get into the bill that ultimately becomes the ballot measure. So most people are also expecting that to be SB 867. So this should be in your bill report. It's by Senator Allen. It has a very long title and covers a wide array of issues, but a lot of those are the same Aqua priorities. So we're going to be working with that author's office to make sure our priorities are in there. Like I said, it'll probably get through the first house of the legislature this year, and then it'll be a two-year bill move early next year so the final text can be on the ballot in 2024. A couple of other topics on legislation that I just wanted to note. Last month, there was a question about AB 66. This is about the timeline for the Natural Resources Agency to approve eligible permits. In the bill, it's 180 days, but the question was, what is the current timeline, or is there a current timeline in statute just to gauge what how significant this change would be? So I spoke to the author's office, and there actually isn't a number of days in statute right now. So this would be just clarifying that, you know, establishing one, but they did say that there are a few other agencies and similar projects such as conservation easements, transit projects that have 180 days as the timeline. So there isn't anything right now for water storage projects, the natural resources, but the precedent is 180 days. So it wouldn't be too much of a change. Another bill, last thing I'm going to highlight before kicking it over to Anthony for budget is SB 366. This is a Caballero bill, which modernizes the California Water Plan. There have been some inquiries about this one. Just to note, it's sponsored by the California Municipal Utilities Association, and they're actually having a meeting with lobbyists tomorrow morning that Dennis and I will be participating in. So we'll have more updates for you tomorrow. And we do know now that the bill is being significantly amended, and we'll see those amendments in print next week. But it's sponsored by the California Municipal Utilities Association. Labor is engaged. Business community is also very supportive. So, you know, we might see some overlapping themes with that and the water bonds, but it's just another emphasis that infrastructure is really the focus right now in California when it comes to water. And with that, I'll kick it over to Anthony for a budget update.
Hi, everybody. It's good to see you all. I know it's been some time since I've been on one of these POL committee hearings, but it's nice to see you. Director Armitage, good to see you back on this committee. I know that you were out for a little bit and you were moved to a different committee when some things shuffled up. So very nice to see you. So I'll be very brief with where things are with the budget right now as it relates to the entire budget and then also where we are in the budget process as a whole. So actually today, a Politico article came out, and it's always really heartfelt to see this, but California's revenue projections as of February now, we're down an additional $1 billion. So that brings us down from the governor's proposed budget, which was roughly $1.7 billion, down to $4.7 billion. So I think we might be roughly about $27 billion in a deficit right now until we balance the state's budget. That being said, California has done a great job over the past decade balancing their budget. So they do have reserves if they have to dip into them. I know right now legislative leadership and the governor have different ideas on how they would like to use those reserves. But at the end of the day, that's what the budget process is for. That's why the legislature and the governor both proposed their budgets and balanced the state budget by June 15th. Although we all know from past committee hearings, the budget does tend to go a little bit longer with trailer bills, likely until the end of the legislative session. With that being said, the process really has just kicked off. The assembly has had two budget sub-hearings. None of the topics have been related to Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency, but the Senate just had their first topic of conversation today that does relate to you guys. It was the main topic of focus was through the State Water Resources Control Board on data modernization for water rights. Essentially, what they're looking to do is add additional funding to ensure that they can complete the Upward program, which would essentially move past the legacy system, which they have already started to do, and provide funding to allow for the actual system to be finished and completed. What this would actually help do would be to collect real-time diversion data, develop analytical tools for the water rights system to add additional watersheds in time of drought, and create really more robust supply and demand models when we have these different years of drought. We're very fortunate this year that we have seen a lot of rain and a lot of snow, so we need to take advantage of that as we can and ensure that our folks in Southern California get the proper amount of water that they need down south. Additionally, overall, the last thing I'll say about the budget, which to me looks positive, I know when you look at it in totality, all the projects that they've been funding over the out years, as we've discussed, they've been doing their budgeting in 1, 2, 3 fiscal years ahead. So really, you're looking at 6 years because each budget year is about a 2 year cycle. They've done a very good job of understanding that we're probably going to go into an economic downturn since we've been in a budget surplus the past 2 years. For water funding specifically, it was $8.8 billion in total funds for the projected 5 years from last year. They've only gone down to $8.6 billion, and it's only a reduction of about $194 billion. And specifically for Santa Clarita Valley, one of the main topics that you guys have been focusing on over the past couple of years is PFAS remediation. And just as an example, they budgeted out $200 million over the next 3 years from last year. It was cut 70, or it's, I'm sorry, it wasn't cut. It was delayed funding should they get a trigger. So $70 million has been put in deferred funding. So this year, you guys would see roughly about $100 million in grants that could be applied for at the State Water Resources Control Board. $30 million next year is slotted. And then the out year of that $70 million, it's really about them finding out, are the state going to have the funds to be able to backfill that $70 million that they're deferring, or will the federal government come in, provide funds in some way that can be used by the state of California? So that's just one example of one of the programs of focus for Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency. With that, thank you guys for having me again. It's great to see you all, and I'm happy to take any questions and answer them to the best of my ability.
Thank you both. Any public comment on this item? See, no public comment. Any director comments?
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Aiken. Mr. Molina, it's good to see you again, too. Let's see. Sorry, let me take a moment here. Okay, on the first page of the report under budget, it's talking about the data. Is that what you were just referring to just now? The enhanced data collection? Okay, yes. Hold on. Let me back up. It says DWR. So the LAO, the Legislative Analyst Office, released a report on the Department of Water Resources and says it's appropriate for DWR to take on the responsibility for collecting and reporting groundwater data statewide, including 11 new positions for enhanced data collection, basin characterization, and reporting. Is that tied into what you were saying or separate?
It's separate, but it's based on the same premise, especially because now with all the rain and snowpack that we're getting up north, I actually had breakfast this morning with the speaker designee who's going to be coming in. And one of his main focuses, he said, finishing out this budget year when he takes the gavel, is going to be a large focus in groundwater remediation and ensuring that there's enough flow to get down places that groundwater is replenished. So it's going to be a major focus when the budget finishes out this year.
Okay. And so my question with that, though, is how does this get coordinated with local agencies like ours in terms of data communication both ways?
Yeah, I mean, usually it will happen through some kind of communication through either like Department of Water Resources or the regional board, and they'll say, you know, this is the information that we need from you, and prepare information, ship it up that way.
So they tell us what data points everybody's going to be reporting on.
Yeah, typically that's the way it works. They'll put out a request.
Okay. All right. And then what happens for agencies if you're not currently already collecting that data?
Well, I don't usually put out a request that you need to start collecting the data. Yeah. And a lot of time it depends on how it's tied to actually, you know, requirements, right? Mm-hmm. And so just saying that we need the data is one thing, but usually it's tied to either an order or something that comes through the administrative process through each of those agencies that requires it and will lay out the requirements for the different agencies.
Okay. All right. I mean, I think it's a great thing. I think we absolutely need more and better coordinated data up and down the state. So I'm encouraged to see that. So that's good. I want to say thank you very much on the fantastic summary on the legislative hearing on water rights. I very much appreciated reading all that detail. I especially appreciated that the tribal perspective was included. I like the quote that was added on Fisher, the senior right holders of water, because I just read the article that I think many of us have read that how they're going to be banning salmon fishing along the coast because the population is plummeting. So I appreciated that that perspective was added in there as well. Okay. Ms. Aiken had referred to AQUA's water rights proposal. Mm-hmm. Is there a place where we can read the summary of what's being proposed?
Yes. Yeah, so we should be able to send you, we can send you their actual proposal, the text of their proposal. I don't know if there's a summary. They probably have a summary in their packet. So we should be able to send you that as well. And just to clarify, so that was what their legal working group came up with if they were going to introduce their own bill. Right now, they're not going to be moving forward with introducing their own bill. They just have this as kind of a jumping off point if they come into an opportunity to offer substantive amendments to one of the bills that they're opposing, or as the legislation moves, if there's something else that they can put this language in. So it hasn't been proposed yet, and it hasn't been approved by the state legislative committee to be proposed yet, but we certainly can still send that to you. I just wanted to note that.
Okay. Yeah, no, I'm trying to get an understanding of what they're looking for. So that's why. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. And then lastly, I know that our Assemblywoman Chiavo has reached out to ask if the agency has any requests to include in her Assembly District 40 budget ask with no guarantees and promises for anything because of the deficit we're in. But I'm curious to know what we ended up giving her.
Yeah, so we're in the process of putting together kind of the list and the description, but we have been in contact with her staff. So that's going to go in this next week.
Okay, so
that's great.
Will you share that with us once it's packaged and nice and neat? Okay. All right.
Yeah, we're drafting a couple cover letters, not just for the Assembly person, but also for the other side, Senate side, with Senator Wilk. So we'll be putting your request in both.
Awesome. Okay. Thank you. That's it. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right. Any other director questions or comments?
I mean, I was curious if we know anything more about Senator Dodd's new water ratepayer assistant program bill, or if that also is dead.
You know, I can't speak. Dennis has been having a lot of discussions with his office, and I am not the most up to date on that. But that is a wonderful question, and we can get you that update as soon as possible as well. I'll touch base with him after this.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
All right. And I have one quick question. Obviously, you spent a lot of time talking and in writing about the water rights changes, and you stated that AQUA is opposing all of the proposed bills, if I understood that correctly. What is the concern? Is the concern the effect on the state water project, essentially, or what are they concerned about to push their opposition? And, you know, given that we're not an adjudicated basin and have no water rights down here, what is our particular concern with these bills?
I think I can get you a more thorough explanation in AQUA's bill packet. They have their actual concerns on each bill written out nicely, so I can send that to show what was specific. But I think the significant amount of just change in the bills, and it's definitely, you know, as it's been a main topic of discussion tonight, going to continue to be prioritized. But a lot of the proposals, I think, were proposing just very significant changes to the current system. And so just in general, a lot of the water districts are concerned that that would have an effect on their rights. But we can get back to you with some more specifics as well.
Yeah. Okay, I can add a little bit of flavor to it. I think Yeah, that's kind of the we're here from the government. We're here to help issue, and I think everybody would admit that the current system of water rights probably could use some improvement. The concern is improvement is probably going in a different direction than most people would want to go, meaning more government oversight, more restriction on certain people's rights. And so I think there's just a real apprehension that once you open that door, it goes to the core of our whole state's water rights system. Mm-hmm. And it may be archaic and it may be difficult, but there's a lot of legal precedent about how that system works and how it's fair for, you know, those people okay. that have had those rights. And so I think people are just super concerned that you open that door, you are not going back. And so
yeah,
there's a cautious feeling of we probably need to handle this in a very systematic way that's not going to just blow the whole thing apart. Because you could end up in a much worse situation of trying to understand. And then ultimately the courts are going to get involved and that takes
forever
to do that. So, and just, you know, on our system here, we do have water rights. They're not adjudicated water rights.
Oh, on the river. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. But we do hold water rights and those are important to us as an appropriator of water here. So it is a super complex question. And you know, the door that is trying to be walked through right now is there was some pretty bad actors that were doing some stuff up, diverting surface water
mm-hmm.
above their right.
Okay.
And the board did not have what they thought was the ability to enforce that.
Right.
They fined them, but the fine was much less than the outcome of their actions. And so, you know, some of these bills are looking to give the State Water Resources Control Board broad-ranging power. They already have a lot of power to do mm-hmm. things, but essentially, you know, you still have the right to go to court. Some of these bills are proposing that the state board be kind of, you know, the administrator, the jury, the judge. And that makes people very nervous because you lose a lot of control to be able to go through a process like that. So it's going to be a really interesting phase because I think there is a lot of momentum and interest in doing something,
mm-hmm.
but it's what do you do that is going to work better?
Yeah.
And you don't necessarily know the outcome until you go through that. And certain people that hold higher water rights are going to be totally against it, right?
Yeah.
They just don't touch it at all.
Right.
So anyway, that's my color on it. But
real quick, who was there a summary of like who was a proponent of this? If sounds like the water community was worried about it, but who's a proponent?
So a lot of it, as Annalee's report came out, there's some of these think tanks, right?
Okay.
Like I think it's what the Public Policy Institute that are putting out these proposals of what a new water rights system could look like. And I think some certain legislative members are taking up those things and trying to advance those through the process.
So they just read it and decided, got excited about it. And,
mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. And there was some bad things going on in this last drought. And so I think most people are like, yeah, let's fix those bad things first, right? There were a couple, you know, agencies or farming, whatever, doing things that weren't right. And the penalties were of such that it didn't incentivize them to do the right thing. And so rather than focusing in on kind of those aspects of what was broken, the door is getting kicked open to a much broader consideration.
Okay. All right. Well, I look forward to seeing what Aqua said, and I'm hoping there's equal emphasis on
AB 366 and some infrastructure. They spent all this time arguing about minutia would be the death of us, I think. So thank you for your presentation and Mr. Molina's presentation, and we'll move on to our local advocate.
Thank you.
Take care. Thank you.
Good evening, Chair and members of the committee. Just will highlight a few issues from my report, add a couple of other items, and answer any questions. The Clean Water Program, the Measure W Watershed Area Steering Committee, did not meet. They're now going to in-person meetings, supposedly in April, sent out one of those surveys as to when people are available. And we have not had any feedback yet as to when that meeting might be. County Board of Supervisors listed several kind of public policy issues that might be of interest to the committee and the agency as to where things are going, and attached a motion by Supervisor Barger trying to assist small water systems. Probably the thing that might be of most interest is there is an effort to expand the Board of Supervisors. There was a motion that failed to get a third vote to immediately expand it. Instead, a consultant is going to be hired. They're going to look at all aspects of improving county governance, but expanding the board would be one of them. So I expect that will be a big issue later this year. Going into next year, any expansion of the board, though, would have to go to the public for approval. As far as the city council, a couple of big items. They agreed to give $2 million contribution to Henry Mayo Hospital for its current capital campaign. There was a lot of discussions, and the council decided to spread that over 4 years and not give a lump sum payment. The YMCA facility on McBean, which has been closed since most of the time since the pandemic, was transferred or given to the city at no cost. Apparently there is some significant repairs that need to be done and old deferred maintenance, but the city hopes to have that operational in 2024 as part of their recreational system. The city council district issue is in full swing. The first meeting was held on March 1st. If any of you either attended or saw it virtually, the sound system was abominable, extremely difficult for people to hear and understand, which is unfortunate. A majority of those speaking still wanted to argue there should not be districts, but I will tell you there will be districts. The lawsuit was settled by the city. There's a settlement agreement, and it calls for districts. Again, to remind everybody, in 2024, there will be two of the districts up for election. One has to be the Hispanic high percentage district. We used to say majority district. The one that has been proposed by the plaintiff's attorney is about 46 or 47% Hispanic. And the other is up to the city council, as to which the other districts will be up in 2024. The other three districts up in 2026, the three members elected last November would basically continue to serve at large, and would then decide whether they run again, where they live, or if they have to move into a new district. There's the process for anybody who wants to submit revised maps to the council for consideration. Obviously, the plaintiff's council would have a say on that. The main rule is that it cannot decrease at all the Hispanic population in basically seat one, which is the Hispanic seat. So any changes to that seat would have to have a corresponding maintenance of minority representation. And supposedly when you go online and start doing your changes, it will tell you whether or not you're complying with that requirement. Any community maps are due by April 3rd. They'll then be online April 6th. And the next public hearing is April 13th. I don't think they have decided where the location is, but it will certainly hopefully be a location that people can understand and hear what is being said. And then finally, I was pleased to be able to assist staff and our federal lobbyists with getting quick turnaround from Supervisor Barger and Mayor Gibbs on letters of support for our funding proposals for the U.S. Senators and Congressman Garcia. And I'm now open to, two other things, I apologize. Going to the K-HITS trip Monday and Tuesday. I know there's several directors going as well. So we'll be up there in Sacramento on Monday and Tuesday. And we have the legislative staff briefing, which we haven't had, I think, since COVID. We're doing that again. April 5th, I think, is the day. Kathy certainly has more details. We will basically have legislative staffers from county, Congress, and our legislators come in, and the city come in and hear what we have to say about where things are and respond to any of their questions and concerns. That's it.
Great. Thank you. Any public comment online or in person? Okay. Any director comments or questions?
Yes. Thank you. Thank you for your report. A few questions. One, the motion by Supervisor Barger to provide support for small water systems. We don't qualify under that, right? We're not considered a small water system, are we?
Well, not so quick. we don't, but we in the community there are several smaller like mutuals that were set up that receive maybe a master meter connection from us, but then it goes into a little community. And we're being approached by a lot of those because they're of the age now where they need to be fixed because they haven't been doing maintenance, right? And that's the challenge with these things. These little mutuals don't have the capacity to do the proper maintenance of these things. And so we are being approached by a few of those communities within our community. And so this may, I'm not sure if it will, but this may be an opportunity to get some funding for those folks to hopefully be converted over to a full public system. And that's the challenge. The facilities are in disrepair. They weren't of a quality that would be a public water system. And so there is one very active one right now, which is called Mint Canyon. And they're technically not even a mutual. They're kind of a group of homes. And yes, it is off Sierra. Yeah. And so they have historically approached us over several years, but we're looking at an opportunity to partner with them to get some grant funding. And this may be another option for additional funding for that. So you'll hear more about that coming to the board, you know, out a ways, but we are talking with them and also the grant funding agencies to see if that's eligible or not.
So we would apply for the funds on their behalf.
Yeah, and that's the key component. They can't because they're not a public water system. So it's kind of this unique island issue and how the grant funding works. So they need to partner with a public water agency like ourselves to be eligible to move forward.
And I'm just thinking out loud. So what if that happens and the grant funding we receive doesn't cover all the expenses? How does that get handled?
The requirement, we'll have an agreement with them that it has to.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's kind of what we're working through right now with NewMet. They have some funds. They collect rates from their little group, and they've been setting those aside to pay the water bill and then have a little bit of money to do these things. So we'll do a letter of deposit with them to start formulating the idea and the concept. And then ultimately, if the parties agree, we would have an agreement, an arrangement to make sure that our existing customers don't pay for the conversion of their system.
Thank you. And then secondly, so the information about the 2023 County Brush Fire Clearance Program that I know the city has provided opportunity to have homeowners come and express their opinions about it. I'm just wondering, is our conservation team keeping an eye on that? Because I noticed when I was reading through the material that one of the potential requirements is that you don't have like any, I don't remember what they refer to, some type of material, I don't know if it's flammable material or whatever the term that's used, within 5 feet of structures if you're in a category of a high fire zone. So I was thinking like mulch, you know, and things like that we promote in our, you know, lawn conversion program may be an issue under what they're proposing. Although I know there's some pushback on some of these, some of the specificity. So I don't know what's going to end up. Is this a done deal?
It's basically the issue right now was simply an argument about the amount of the assessment and the tremendous increase in the number of homes that are now covered. That was all done through state legislation, and the fee structure was established by the County Board of Supervisors already. So the hearing, which I think was last Saturday, was basically an opportunity for people to go to the hearing and say, I shouldn't be in there. I'm not in a high fire area.
Okay.
Or you made a mistake. But as far as the program is going forward. Like I indicated, it was established by the state and the fee structure was approved by the county board. Clearly, I think you're making a good point that there may need to be some dialogue as to what is within 5 feet and what is covered. I mean, some of the areas, you'd be surprised if you look at the map to believe that's really in a high fire area.
Yeah.
And of course, at the same point in time, you have parallel arguments about what the state insurance department has set up as high fire areas that's affecting people's ability to get insurance, not just affordability, but actually even getting fire insurance. So it's a involved process, but certainly makes sense to monitor and see what the fire department is doing as they go out and do these inspections. What concerns they have and anything that we might be doing that is promoting conservation, that makes sense. But as far as being able to change the rules and change the mandate, that's done.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Thank you.
Welcome.
Any other director comments?
No. Yeah. But you talk about the areas on that zone. I mean, it has a lot of old orchard. Like a lot of what everybody thinks is Valencia with the paseos, like dripping with water half the time. It's a pretty huge part of town that they put in, and it is odd. And then the excluded parts that you would think would be in also. So,
yep.
Fun times. Well, thank you for your summary. Good to hear all that you're involved with. And if we're done with questions, we will see you next time.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Bye.
All right. Moving on to item four, discussion of staffing consideration presented by Kathy Martin.
Thank you so much. As you know, the agency is going through their budget preparation process, and part of that is to look at and consider additional staffing needs over the next two fiscal years. So the one that we are bringing forward is to have a full-time in-house government affairs analyst type position to assist with the things that we're talking about tonight. We're going to have a short PowerPoint just to show you where it fits in the overall structure. But as we're getting that ready, the agenda item includes just a bullet list of some of the duties that this person would manage. It's, you know, Steve and I have said we share the duties right now, but there's many other competing efforts with our time, and we rely very heavily on our legislative advocates, and we could do more if we had somebody that could be more proactive and more closely engaged with our advocates and others as well. So besides managing the advocacy contracts, this position would engage proactively and directly with our state, local, and federal representatives. They would be that person out in the field, face-to-face, and being a liaison to other industry aid, organizations, coalitions, AQUA, all of that. So for the position, go ahead and go for the next one, Uni. Just as a reminder, this is our... Oops. Go back, Lynn. We are under the Water Resources, Watersheds, and Outreach Group. So this includes Communications Manager. Yeah, that'll be a good spot for it. Our Education and our Public Affairs. Next one. And we recently did an entire outreach year in review where we covered just some of the main items that each of these groups takes care of. And then up there next to me, assisting the Assistant General Manager with management of legislative advocacy. It doesn't really fall anywhere else. The rest of the team has lots on their plate. So... Yeah,
sorry. I know. I think I asked you offline, but these instructors are not all full-time, right?
They are all part-time.
Okay.
Yeah.
But then everybody else on this slide is full-time.
Just Lindsay and Laura.
Okay. So Casey Gordon is not full-time?
No, Casey's also a part-time.
Okay. Employee.
And all of the part-time are 20 hours a week or less on average.
I think if you bring this to the board, that's good to know because... Okay. It looks like a very big department, but yeah. You realize that some of it's part-time, it makes a difference.
Okay. Yes, I appreciate that comment. That's a good point. Okay, next one. So this new position would report to the communications manager, would still work closely with the assistant general manager, of course. And as I said before, would just allow a much more strategic and proactive role so that we can advance our priorities as well as our standing as a policy leader in the water industry. We've done a lot in that area, but it's wonderful to have Dennis Albiani as part of the AQUA Legislative Committee. But just having the additional staff person that had the time and resources and knowledge to really plug into those things and not only bring information back to the board, but just carry our priorities forward, I think would just be really valuable. The position would also, I see, continue to provide a role of support in our grant efforts. We do that now, gathering letters of support and whatever we can to help Cheryl. But again, it would just allow a little bit more resources to be more strategic and proactive in this.
The communications manager TBD, is there a reason for that? Because
I am retiring in 3 months.
You didn't know?
Okay, didn't know that.
She's understand.
I'm in denial.
Which is why it says TBD.
Yeah.
Definitely buy, because we're proposing this for not this coming fiscal year, but the one after.
Oh, so 24, 25. Okay.
Yes. And salary range that we have proposed, 33, is the same as a management analyst 2 position. Mm-hmm. And just in my informal review of that type of position, legislative affairs, public affairs type positions in our group of water agencies that we always compare with, that was right in the middle of those.
Okay. Give me the number of what that salary would be annually.
It's up there, the 102 to 124.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Thank you. I
parentheses makes thing and makes things invisible. That's what it is. It's an aside.
By definition, aside.
Right? Yeah. So that's, and we just want to bring that forward for a discussion. There's no action requested this time. It's just informational to get input, though, on whether you feel like this should continue and go forward into the full budget proposal support.
And one of the things I'll just add as we're considering this, a couple things. One, there's the legislative aspect, and then there's kind of this regulatory aspect that's going on, like PFAS, for example.
Right.
And really feeling the need, we have to plug all the way in on those things and try to help the different branches of government that are considering those things understand the impact.
Yeah.
And that takes a lot. You have to formulate your ideas in the right way. You have to communicate them the right way, and you have to do it consistently over time. So not just, you know, kind of the bill aspect of it, but the regulatory aspect of that is something that we really want to start focusing on more. We're doing it, but it is tough to do it well when everything else is going on, right? And so that's one aspect. The other thing I just wanted to mention is with Kathy's pending retirement, we are actively recruiting for her replacement right now. We have discussed, and Kathy is willing to potentially work in a what they call an extra health capacity. So this is kind of a, if you retire from PERS, you have to go through this very specific thing. You probably remember we did kind of something similar with Dirk's position. His was different because he was still doing his same position. So that's a different classification. This would be just basically a consultant contract with Kathy to do in the interim period between next year, kind of this role, local government role for us. So she's been willing to do that as kind of a transition. And so I just wanted you guys to be aware we are thinking about that, and that may be a proposal that we bring back to the group to consider. But for right now, we're kind of, the proposal is for this legislative analyst position to be not this fiscal year, but the one after. That's the proposal on the table.
Any public comments to begin?
There's
no public comment? Seen none? Yes? No? No? Okay. Any director comments on this? So, questions?
Yeah, a couple questions. So one is, are we aware of other agencies who have this formalized role on staff already? We're aware of them.
Yeah, there's several that we can provide. Kind
like
of
who in our group? I mean, I know like Matt has it, for instance, probably multiple people, but like, who would we know, like Las Virgenes, Palmdale?
Las Virgenes does it similar to us right now.
Okay.
But for sure, the slightly larger agencies like Irvine Ranch.
Right. Cucamonga Valley.
Cucamonga, Eastern.
Okay.
Yeah, and some of them have departments.
Yeah.
Intergovernmental departments where you have, you know, somebody working on potentially like grants in that department,
yeah,
a manager and other legislative, you know, people that are in that group.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay. So they've clearly seen value to that role.
Yeah. And I think, you know, like the grants, you can tell we're starting to hit pretty good on that. I mean, a lot of that goes out to Cheryl, right? Mm-hmm. But a lot goes to Jeff and Dennis and their teams, right? Mm-hmm. And Hunt mentioned he plays a role in that too, and kind of getting that package together. But that's a lot of work, just that aspect of it. And that's not really focusing on kind of some of these other legislative aspects or the regulatory aspect. Mm-hmm. And so we're feeling like, because we are investing so heavily, you know, time-wise in that some of these other things, you know, they're on Kathy and I's list, but it's tough to keep them at the top of the list for us right now.
Mm-hmm. We've had some specific challenges, like PFAS that most agencies have some aspect of, but we have been particularly hard hit. And we're tracking it certainly on the regulatory level, but there's more that we could be doing proactively as things like the EPA MCL that's proposed is coming down and, you know, engaging with AQUA to make sure that we are part of that discussion and contributing to those efforts.
And then my other question is, so this new position, would this be in addition to the support we already have from Van Skoyek Associates and California Advocacy and Paul Shaffery? Or is there going to be a shift?
Yeah, I think what we would look to do is transition. We're still going to need a state person engaged and giving us advice. We're still going to need the federal person. I do think that this position will take on the responsibilities kind of our local, you know, our local face, and then managing those consultants. So we'd envision that the local contract would sunset, and we wouldn't be doing that anymore.
Okay. And do we know how much we were spending on the local contract to offset? So kind of, in my mind, I kind of feel like it offsets some of this cost of this full-time position. And
yeah, local contract now is $60,000 a year. So that'd be part of it.
Thank you.
Anybody else?
It makes sense to me to have somebody in-house doing all the work and coordinating and being our face, especially locally, you know, having that personal connection that we can just drag somebody in from the city, drag somebody, you know, like the.
Okay. One thing, would it be possible to, I would love to see more opportunities for us board members to interact with our other local electeds or our state electeds or federal electeds. And I know it's really hard to do that because we're a 9-member board and you have to be careful with Brown Act violations and things like that. So I know that makes it really difficult. So I don't know if there is some way to work around that, but still provide opportunities for us to be parts of these meetings, just so we get to know each other, right? And we can reinforce what is being said by the people who need to talk in the room, and be there to support that. So I don't know if that's something you can, you probably don't want that part of this, but I guess I'm just asking that for consideration of that and how that can be built in to perhaps this person's role as well to figure out the right balance of that.
Now let us give that some thought. It is a challenge because if everybody wants to play, then it becomes a Brown Act thing, right? Yeah. So that has its own, you know, context to it. And then the other flip side of that is if everybody doesn't want to do it, then you get, you know, certain board members that are getting more inside baseball than others, and that's a challenge too. So it's really trying to balance that, but we'll give that some thought. I mean, I think, you know, we're going to get on these annual things meeting, but that's really a staff meeting, right? Or that we're doing. It's not the electeds themselves, but we can give some thought to about, you know, how could we coordinate some of more of that kind of intergovernmental, you know, meetings, you know, like understanding what the city really thinks and those things. So we'll give that some thought.
Okay, thank you.
Well, that reminds me of something that may also be equally valuable or more valuable. For instance, the United tour, you know, getting to know, a good role for all of us would be get to know people at Palmdale Water, United, things like that. I mean, because that's who we really work with. That may be a little different than meeting with Congressman Garcia or Senator Will. Those, I do know that they usually have the board president do stuff like that for things, you know, those, some of those meetings, not all of them, and a lot of it is staff. So, but I think there's a place for it. I do see the value in having a regular face for the agency.
you know, as far as a staff person, I'm thinking of, for instance, like SoCal Gas for a long time, or Edison has people that participate in FICA and San Fernando Valley, via a peer chamber. Those people become like the go-to. You kind of want to go, you don't want to have like 12 people and then they can't remember who's from where. Having a go-to for our agency would be really good. And I do think reducing, I mean, I know our local consultant does a good job, but to have it be us, not be a consultant locally, I think would be a good change. Question, Van Skoyak and Cal Advocates, do they participate in regulatory issues at all now, or are they, okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think.
Finish your thoughts.
Yeah, no. I think that's really important. You know, I know back in the water resources side, like MAP participates in some rulemaking and stuff, but this just to get our point out and to be able to communicate it from a technical standpoint in these work groups, I think would be a big improvement for us. And you know, the interaction, I mean, I saw that when we did the merger, you know, the interaction with the key staff people about what the real issue is, you know, what our points are. You need to go from this umbrella, like, we're not happy with this, to if you change these things, it would be really good, you know, be super happy if you did these things, to have that relationship again, like a consistent relationship that is us, I think would be really good. As far as the transition, actually, I mean, my viewpoint is, spend time finding this person. I personally do think if we find somebody that is both technology, industry savvy and communications, that's better than just communications. Like the energy guys can talk all the time about like the grid and this and that and this other thing and peak loading and blah, blah, blah. We need somebody to do that on the water side and be very friendly and communicative. It's going to be a hard hire. But I think if you can have somebody that go in and drill into the issues with, you know, 4 PPM versus 6 PPM and resin life and all of that, that's going to be hard to find a person like that, but it'd be super to find a person like that. I would be, you know, to fill it in between while we're looking would be fine, but I do want to, you know, take the time to find the right person for a long term, because that's going to be an important role. So. And it is good for your point about, you know, the savings, offsetting the budget, I think will be important when it comes to the finance and to the full board. And also like listing those roles, you know, the ones that are part-time, because it does sometimes feel like, I know there's a lot of staffing asks this year. Rochelle mentioned it, and I want to make it palatable. So.
That's probably the reason we chose year two of this cycle, because we know there's a lot of others.
But we'll hear about it at the full board this year. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I think, you know, and we can also say it's going to be, I mean, we're hiring for your position and then we're going to hire this, and, you know, just that we're taking the time to find the right person too. You know, I think if we had to fill it in 3 months, I would be concerned that we couldn't fill it, honestly, on top of finding somebody to replace you. So. Seems like it's hard to find people these days. I don't know.
To replace Kathy, it's very fine.
Yeah.
Replace Kathy, let's be honest.
It's really hard to find people.
Kathy became the technical expert. I remember the first time we were getting up to speed, right? It was baptism by
fire. So tell us about Resin Life, Kathy.
She knows who to ask. I mean, that's the most important thing.
I'll get back to you with that information. Is a good answer.
Yes.
I would wonder, and kind of permeating off our thoughts, if there's somebody in-house that could be grown into that position. Maybe they're not at the $120,000 a year level now, but maybe they have some of the agency knowledge in water specific, and in a year or two could be educated and groomed into that kind of position.
Yeah, we'll give that fair some enough. Thought.
It might be interesting. I mean, there's nobody doing it today. Right. So if you had somebody who was at the $70,000-$80,000 a year level that would have a career path to get there.
Growth opportunity.
I mean, Steve, did you know Tony Tartaglia gas company, Ana Frutos Sanchez?
Ana for sure.
Yeah. Like that kind of personality with a technical background would be fabulous. Yeah. I mean, it's hard. Yeah.
I just don't know.
Right person is amazing. But whether they're in-house or out-of-house, yeah. And I do think, they don't have to be like a water quality expert because that's different, but to be comfortable with the issues and to be able to communicate it, of course, would be. Because, I did see that the legislative staff and certainly the regulatory staff is going to need some meat. Right.
So,
yeah.
All right. Cool. Well, thank you, guys.
It's exciting.
You'll see it come, each of the committees is kind of walking through this process. So ultimately, you'll see the budget, you'll see the impacts, and we'll have a discussion at that time about does it fit or doesn't it fit?
Well, so, but you know what? The impact would be great. I mean, you see that across the board with regulations. If you don't get involved, you get left out.
You are the victim.
Sure. And I mean, I know that a lot of water and other agencies will participate, like Met and stuff. I'm sure, like you said, has a department. But I mean, they make glaring errors if you don't comment on it as to how it affects you. So, all right, cool. That's exciting. The next one is the communication manager's report.
And just a couple of things I wanted to update you all on. Start with the recruitment for my replacement. The position application period closed Monday. Mm-hmm. They received 33 resumes.
Wow.
So we are doing an initial screening of those, and the recruiting firm will do the first just quick Zoom call and kind of narrow down a list of people that she recommends that we do a first round of interviews. So that is underway, but 33 was a great number. And there's some very, very qualified applicants in there. So I am optimistic. Unless Steve's optimistic yet.
But what recruiting firm are we using?
Ralph Anderson.
So that's a big one. Yeah, so it's not local.
No, it's one that does a lot of
executive
state and national executive searches, yes.
Good.
And then we did it through CAPIO, it's also California Association of Public Information Officials. We post on their job board and they put it out in their newsletter. So we got some good returns. Our Water Academy kicked off last night. Thank you too for attending our first session. The response seemed to be great. There was a really good energy, a very interesting group of people, diverse backgrounds and amounts of knowledge. And our speakers did a great job. We sent out a survey to the group just about our first session, because as a pilot program, we want to be making changes on the fly if we need to improve something for next week even. But it was really good. They were very engaged and showed up on time and hung out afterwards and asked some good questions. We've got a couple of video projects in the works. I think we're supposed to get the finals tomorrow, but our Three Leaves, a local video production firm, came in a couple of weeks ago. We did a shoot all day at the Rockefeller office and then at Matt Dickens' home. And they're all on Fix-A-Leak week. stuff. So we hired an actor for the lead role, mm-hmm. but we had the supporting roles were all from our staff. And so it's just kind of a tongue-in-cheek, fix a leak week thing where the main character's name is Carl, and he's just really, really earnest and enthusiastic about fix a leak week. So there's a whole montage of him doing a warm-up, you know, pumping his wrenches and running around the office. It's fix a leak week. So it's fun. And we're excited. We'll have a long-form video, then we're doing various cuts of it. So there'll be a 30-second one that we'll have on like Spectrum and stuff, and then 15-second pieces for social media. Fix a leak week is next week. Start getting those out in the public. We're excited. We've also been refreshing our, I almost hate to call it drought. I saw the drought monitor map today, but our water use efficiency messaging is getting another refresh. We do that about 3 times a year. And so our newest one is more spring focused and kind of a flower power, you know, and using some terms like, you know, groovy gardening, and I'm digging my new sustainable landscape. And so some fun stuff is coming out. So we're rebranding all of our collateral material. We're getting some new Paseo banners that'll be up with that new messaging. And then, as Hunt mentioned, I have the date wrong on this agenda item. I just realized we have a legislative staff briefing on April 5th. Mm-hmm. So that's where we host the district directors from all of the local elected offices. And we have somebody coming from every one of them. So it should be a great turnout. And we'll just share our priorities and challenges and have a conversation with them. And we got some new water bottle stickers. I got a couple of different kind of fun ones over here. Your welcome container for your water bottle or your laptop or your phone. Where do you want to put them? And that's all.
Any public comment? None? Okay. Any director comments or questions?
Well, first of all, I'm super excited about the Water Academy. I get to go next week. Yay! So I'll get to see what you did. I'm excited about that. Question, though, tying into the spring messaging refresh, I was just seeing in the news the last couple of days that it seems like other agencies are starting to change their restrictions now mm-hmm. to be looser.
Yes.
So I'm thinking we're going to confuse the heck out of everybody again. So I don't know what we can do about that, but I'm sure you're aware of it. I just wanted to...
On our messaging, we are going away from anything that is just specifically attached to like stage two. It's just the things that are always, we're going to continue to promote the water efficient irrigation rebates that we have and the laundry placement and basic common sense things, but not wasting water. So we are getting away from the specific drought, but we are also using within that messaging that just because we had a bunch of rain, you don't get to just turn the tap on again, that we depleted our bank water supplies by about 45%. We need to replenish those for the next dry spell. And so that was together.
Okay. Yeah, one thing on that messaging, obviously it's coming out of Metropolitan, right?
Right.
So the big behemoth is, and part of it, they were in an emergency. And
right.
So that's the nuance of it, right? And so their emergency had people watering
one day a week max.
Yeah. And so I think they were feeling the need, we got to at least get out of that. But it's such a nuanced message, right? Because it just goes out, not restrictions, no more. Yeah. And so it really is difficult. So we're trying to kind of balance it as we walk through this year on how it looks. But I do think the message of, you know, depleted supplies and the way our portfolio works, it's important that we replenish those supplies. And so more conservation on the shoulder of this just helps that ability, and we fill our banks, and
right.
that's the operational plan that we've got going forward.
I did just say Palmdale put out.
Yeah, I was going to say last
night. Water, yeah, that they still are encouraging watering only 3 days a week, but they took off the fine 3 days. Like any 3 days was fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would say that I think Matt Dickens' message is the way to go, you know, making water conservation a California way of life. Mm-hmm. I mean,
yes,
that's the reality. We live in a desert, like most of us in the desert. We can't just, but it's tricky with all this water.
Yeah.
It is.
Any other structural questions?
I just wanted to say that it was great being there last night. Thank you so much for having us. I thought that our staff did a phenomenal job. Everybody did such a good job, and I wish it was longer.
I know.
Honestly, I was going to say, I think those topics at the front are such, they're the foundation for everything else, that I wish we could spend a little bit more time explaining that, because I think that once people understand that part much better, everything else kind of just falls into place. So that would be my only note for next time.
Yeah.
I'll pass that on.
Yeah.
But everybody did such a good job, really.
Thank you. We'll pass that message.
Not enough women, but you know.
I did notice that actually.
Well, it's like go in and account.
Yeah. It just seemed like two women out of, seven. Oh, she counted. Okay, so tell me, seven women.
Yeah, there were two women up, two, three, four, five, six. I think there were six women.
And how many guys?
Well, there were 25.
Oh, okay.
So
yeah, I actually did notice that. Was that without counting? Was that proportional to the applicants?
We ended up just taking the first 25
because I know you had more than applied.
We had 46 applicants.
Yeah. Yeah.
The thing that I really like, I mean, it was a different crowd.
That is what I was going to say.
It was a crowd that didn't have an agenda, which I thought was really unique. I mean,
Kathy didn't get the question.
Yeah. And so that for me was super refreshing.
It was.
People that just wanted to learn about water. And that was evident from kind of the introductions that we had around the room and things. So that for me was very unique. We've done a lot of outreach, right? But you always end up getting kind of that same group. And this was different than that.
That's what I wrote down. I said, fresh faces and more diverse. Sandra Cattell is one that maybe a lot of people know.
Right.
I knew one guy from Trash, Raphael. Did you know Raphael from before?
No.
Or I knew he was with either Waste or BFI before. I forgot. He was government affairs for one of them. And then Carl Kanowski, who writes in The Signal. He's a local lawyer. Were the only people I knew, but other, you know, just, and then a few young people, like 20s, which was great to see. So it was really cool, the mix that you had. And just excited that they wanted to spend 4 days learning about water.
Nice.
Which was nice. My comment, I would say, is similar to your comment, was I felt like we needed more time for interaction. Sarah Fleury did a great presentation. Mm-hmm. And so, the first half, we'll see what they say. But I felt like that was the key piece of information that I wish like everybody in the whole community knew. And I wanted to see if they had questions, like allow for questions about that. And then they had, you know, some generic questions.
What about rebates?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What about the rebate?
I had a lot of questions about rebates.
They had a lot of questions about rebates. One question about water softening. But I felt like, I don't know, that I want to make sure that they absorbed that first part and asked any questions that they wanted, because that was really key. So I felt like the question part was short.
It was.
Yeah. And you could see the presenters like having to rush several of them. I think Matt chopped one of his completely.
Yeah.
Just gone. It's timing. Because I do want them to ask what they know about. And to that point, she had a flyer on
you know, if we're hurting our current customers when there's new housing tracks coming out, like, are we taking our water to do that? Because she would, you said you're sure they were going to ask that. Nobody asked that. And it goes back to, like, nobody had an agenda. So, and also what I took away is how many people loved Santa Clarita. You heard,
yeah,
everybody did their intro and they're like, I just moved here. I always wanted to move here, or something like that. It was like kind of cool to see in their comments. Two other questions. When you have your ideas for like these stickers or the video, are we generating those or are we having a consultant generate those ideas? We're kind of in-house?
Yeah, it's a mix. We did a brainstorming session one time. I felt like our material was getting a little stale. So I just put out this call and said, if you're the one that has your family cracking up around the dinner table, or you think you're whatever, just come. So we had people from finance and like every department just about, and we sat around here and just brainstormed, tossed around ideas. The Carl idea came up for that one.
Mm-hmm.
The flower power stuff, our consultant Rachel, RMG Communications, helped a lot with that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's kind of a group effort.
Yeah, that's cool. And then what are we doing with the level two? Somebody actually asked me about that today, this morning. When do we get to relax our restrictions?
No,
and are we still mandated to be in level two?
Yes.
And then is that going to go away?
I would suspect it does, but we haven't heard yet. So we're just going to quietly stop talking about it. I think so. Yeah. And then when that happens, when the governor takes that off the table, I think you'll see us formally take it off the table at that point. But mm-hmm. I think you'll see us transition.
Yeah.
Kind of just with a different message that we're putting out.
Yeah. And I mean, because I always felt like there are the people that just want to do the right thing. And if you tell them Monday, Wednesday, Friday, they're going to worry about Monday, Wednesday, Friday till we can tell them that they can stop.
Yeah.
So you expect that we will be able to tell them,
don't worry about the day of the week soon. The end of this month, the DWR should be reconsidering the state water project allocation. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot is going to trigger around that time period, mm-hmm. right? Because I think the allocation is going to go up.
Yeah,
it should significantly.
Yeah,
I think that can be a trigger to move things forward. But it'll be interesting to see what the governor does with coming out of this. You know, there's still the challenge is depleted groundwater,
right,
in the Central Valley. Right, it's still a problem. And having all this rain and everything doesn't fix that in 1 year, and so. You know, we're not in a drought anymore, but that groundwater basin is, it's, you know, so it's going to be interesting to see how the state government transitions, especially the governor, on the message.
If they essentially send the reservoir water to the Central Valley and make us keep conserving, is that what the thought is?
No, I'm just saying it's tough for, I think, the governor to say we're done with the drought when everybody knows the groundwater basin's depleted still.
You could help them.
Yeah.
But
well, he has
us watering.
The governor has made some of those moves.
Right. I thought that's what I was talking about.
He has been, you know, encouraging the state board to recognize the historic nature of how much water's moving. And
right.
So let's
be a little more
flexible with some of the rules.
Right.
And so that has made a difference.
So they could move some water mm-hmm. there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was being a little snarky, but that is what I saw.
Yeah.
But my point is Santa Clarita, unless something changes, Santa Clarita having some guy water Monday, Wednesday, Friday is not going to help the Central Valley. So I wish they would recognize, you know, the investments the community's made and the differences in some areas. If some areas are in dire straits, help find a way to help them. But if somebody else has, you know, excess supply and, you know, flooding, maybe we don't have to keep telling them you only need to water 3 days a week. It sounds silly to the average person to say that. So, okay. Well,
good luck with your messaging.
We will.
I said good luck with your messaging. Yeah.
No, I think it sounds good. And yeah, the average person is going to probably, I think the reminders and flower power is super cool. I like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good. So you said we have stickers. Okay. Yes. Good. Takes. Yeah. Okay. Anything else? Okay.
One thing. POC a couple weeks ago did a social media post on their scholarship opportunities. And so I clicked on it and I was looking at all of them. And it has, so two questions. It has one that's listed still under CLWA.
Hmm.
It was an interesting amount too. It was like significantly more than I would have thought was in there. So there's like a pot of money sitting there that I'm not even sure anybody realizes is there.
It's not there.
It's not there.
And then my other question was, I know part of the action that we took for when we were talking about scholarships was some of the money was to go to COC. So I'm assuming that's next cycle then?
Yes.
Okay.
So fall of 2023.
Any presentation or questions on the planning calendar, item 6? Seeing none, no public comments on it, we can adjourn.
Thank you, everybody.